Hello and welcome to the Right to Honourable podcast, as truthful as resources permit. My name's Jimmy and I voted Leave in the EU referendum in 2016.
My name is Jazza and I have come off the back of hosting a joint therapy session amongst mainly other Romaniac types like myself the evening of the general election of 2019. Merry Christmas. It was fine. Ended badly, not unexpectedly, but also I wanted to ask, how long are we going to continue to define ourselves by how we voted in 2016? It's decided now, isn't it?
It is pretty much decided.
So pretty much.
Maybe it's time that we retired the introduction.
Oh, thank God you finished that with, it's like, this is the end now. Goodbye, everyone.
It's time for us to hang up our capes. Our work here is done.
Yeah, what work is that?
I don't know.
To continue to misinform as many as possible. We meet every so often to talk about politics, social issues and current events. And one of the biggest of the current events that's happened recently is the general election, where the Conservatives won an 80-seat majority.
Yes.
Very exciting. You came along to the live stream that we hosted on my channel.
Not in person, I should
not
say.
In person, no. Just you were digitally present.
I was digitally shitposting.
You were. For some reason I made you a mod. God knows why I decided to do that. What was the... As a representative for the 52%, what was the general experience for you of the Conservatives getting a majority?
You have to bear in mind that I watched the general election result with my green voting girlfriend.
Mm-hmm. Well, you were a green voting boyfriend.
Yes, but you know, I'm more a tourist in the green domain. She's a permanent resident, more or less. And so the you know, any joy that I got out of you know, a properly leave implementing administration, winning the general election, was tempered by obvious upset of what was going on.
Right, okay. So you were then having to console.
Somewhat, yeah. Mm-hmm. Somewhat. But I was pleased about that Boris Johnson won, in the sense that Leave will actually be implemented now, mm-hmm. which I think is what should have happened after mm-hmm. the referendum result. And, you know, it means that people who've tried to stop the referendum result being implemented by various means have lost, which I think is good. And it does put, you know, from, even if you think Brexit is going to be very bad, it at least stops the toing and froing over whether it will actually happen.
Mm.
And I think there is something to be said for having some certainty around that issue and having an administration that can, you know, can do what it wants as far as, you know, Brexit policy is concerned.
It's going to be so weird. We haven't had a majority government with this kind of a majority since Blair was... Oh, no, since Brown. We always forget about him. Bless him, poor Gordon.
I'll put it another way. This podcast has never...
Has never
broadcast, you know, with a proper majority in the House of Commons.
There was the, like, year or so where the Conservatives had a majority after the 2015 election.
I feel that was a comfortable majority, but in the context of the EU referendum coming up, it wasn't a very big majority.
It was a majority of less than 10, was it not?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Or 13, I want to say. It was very small numbers. It wasn't anything like...
It wasn't like a stonking majority.
80, yeah. Is it a stonking majority? It's a stonking majority. I don't know why I'm trying to split hairs here and try and make it seem like it was better than... Well, worse than it.
It sort of bothers me that it's described as a majority of 80. I mean, how many... They got, what, 364 seats or something like mm-hmm. that in the end? And that is a majority of... When you know, bearing in mind the House of Commons is 650, you know, it's like 30 seats above what half the House mm-hmm. is. So really, it's not a majority of 80 at all. It's just 80 above, you know... It's not even 80 above what Labour got. Do you know what I mean?
No, but it's the difference... Yeah, I don't really understand how it works either. I did find out why it was justified, and it made sense. Like, it's the difference between if everybody voted a certain way.
Yeah.
If everybody voted against the government, then it would still have a majority of 8, I think.
Yeah.
Is the whole point of it, and like, fine. I vaguely understand that as a concept.
I know where they're coming from, but I think it does sort of flatter how many seats they've got, but yeah.
So the issue of Brexit has kind of been like it's been decided now, and it's so far out of our hands, even more so than it was then when there was a hung parliament. What do you think about the fact, and I'll just ask for you to comment on this very briefly, Jimmy. What do you think about the fact that 52% of people voted for second referendum parties in terms of like absolute vote? Obviously the Conservatives got a majority, but because of our, that's because of our voting system.
I mean, presumably, strictly speaking, it wasn't 52% because the Lib Dems did not have a second referendum policy.
A revoke or second referendum policy.
I can see that, but people did
not. Oh, can you?
People, well, I mean, I wanted us to leave, but I voted Green. So I'm a fairly good example of how...
I'm sure there were plenty of Remainers who voted for Boris Johnson.
There were definitely lots of Tory Remainers who voted for Boris Johnson, and... You know, in my family, there were some people who thought we should leave, not necessarily because they'd voted voted that way in the first place,
but to get Brexit done.
Well, that, they actually ended up voting Lib Dem.
Do you know what I mean? That's, somebody had to.
Who did you vote for in the end?
You weren't paying attention on the stream, were you?
Not 100% of the time. I gather you didn't vote Conservative.
Well done. Shall we go through them? Knock them out one by one.
You wouldn't have voted for the Brexit Party.
I didn't vote Brexit Party. That's correct. Even though I did like some of their constitutional reform suggestions.
You probably didn't vote for the Christian People's Party, assuming they were running.
We don't need to go through the Christian People's Party. That's fine. We can forget them. Monster Raving Looney also didn't vote for
them. I don't think you'd have voted Labour.
Because
I think that you're sensible enough not to want Jeremy Corbyn to be in charge. But maybe you did.
No, I didn't. I think actually the main reason that I didn't vote Labour is because I am in one of the safest Labour seats in the country and like to kick people who have unchallenged power and scrap against them in a way that makes me feel weak, but like I've done something honourable.
Yeah, well, we were in a similar situation, so it was a very safe Labour seat, so...
Yeah. It didn't really matter.
If you're not in a marginal, you're actually very free to vote for who you want, for basically. Not that it matters.
If I were in a Labour Conservative marginal, for example, I would have justified voting Labour to stop a Conservative majority. Stopping a Conservative majority was the number one thing that I wanted.
Okay.
So we have left the possibility of the Greens and the Lib Dems.
I think you voted Lib Dem.
Do you?
Yeah.
Why do you think I voted Lib Dem? How interesting.
Because fundamentally you are a Lib Dem, and...
So are you, Jimmy.
Yeah. The tendency is always to return home, I think.
Mm-hmm. I actually, for the first time in my adult life, didn't vote for the Lib Dems.
So you voted Green.
I voted Green. I copied you.
I've never been so persuasive.
And actually, to be completely honest, I don't know if I would have voted Green and thought of it as an option until you had presented it as an option to me. So thank you, Jimmy. But the reason why I couldn't vote Lib Dem was because of the revoke policy. I wouldn't have, if in the parallel universe where the Lib Dems got a majority in this election, if they had revoked Article 50, I wouldn't have been comfortable with that, and I wouldn't have wanted that.
I think in practice, in this crazy alternative universe where the Lib Dems somehow get a majority of 360,
it exists. There are infinite parallel universes with infinite histories and futures.
I'm not entirely convinced they would have revoked outright.
But they wrote it down in their bloody manifesto and talked about it quite a lot.
And in a way, they'd have been justified, because they'd have said, in the British Constitution, if you win a majority in the House of Commons, you can basically do what you want.
Yeah, but I think it needed to be an equal/opposite democratic event, which would have had to have been a referendum.
Yeah, I didn't want a second referendum, but I viewed it as... kind of like if we'd had ended up with a second referendum, I'd have sort of seen that as acceptable, given the things that I didn't like about the things that I don't like about the Tories in general. So that did kind of work out for me in the end. But I think, you know, the Tories will probably throughout the course of the next 5 years do a lot of things that I don't approve of, not least neglect the state of the public sector. And the funding for various things. Although they have promised a lot of funding.
And thank God that isn't on our consciences as Green voters. I actually kind of understand why so many people vote for them, because it's like, oh, I've partaken in the democratic process, but had none of the consequences of actually somebody representing me.
It's very good.
It's quite cathartic.
The last 3 years of having to, you know, apologise for every single Leave-related folly, of which there have been many.
Jimmy, you have never apologised for a single thing.
I would apologise, you know, more in the sense of defend / excuse.
Speak for the 52%.
So, yeah. Speaking of the Lib Dems, what did you make of Jo Swinson losing her seat?
I hated more than anything.
Losing her seat?
No, I hated more than anything the reaction to her losing her seat.
The Nicola Sturgeon fist bumping.
The Labour people who have been trying to paint the Lib Dems as like some kind of evil pretend Tories.
Yellow Tories.
Well, the SNP are tartan Tories, aren't they? Just put like red Tories,
yellow Tories. Mm-hmm. Everyone is a Tory.
Everyone's a Tory unless you're a Corbynista.
Maybe even the Trots are Tories. Trotskyite Tories.
Yeah, Trotsky Tories.
Stalinist Tories.
Jesus. I am a big fan. I think that she made a fatal error with going for the revoke policy. I think that her over-bullishness on the national stage in the run-up to this election was also probably misjudged. Mm. But I think that she is an honourable politician. And actually, you've talked about her like that as well, as somebody who actually seems pretty competent.
Of the candidates who were running to be Prime Minister, i.e. the leaders of, you know, the various parties, her and, I mean, also Caroline Lucas, I think, would be better Prime Ministers than Boris Johnson.
Isn't the leader of the Greens.
Yeah, you're right. That is true. Mm-hmm. It would be Sean Berry or Jonathan Bartley?
The guy.
It's sort of funny, like, it's normally it's the woman, like, who would get sidelined in this scenario, but for some reason in the Greens,
no one gives
a shit about the guy.
It's like Sean Berry or the guy, who is, he's in that position because he's very good at, like, admin, is apparently what I've heard.
You need people to, you know.
But I was really sad that Jo Swinson lost her seat. I think
she was really, you know, sort of unfairly savaged by people, you know, for not really any substantial reason. And the whole argument about, oh, you don't really have a chance to be Prime Minister, it's like, well, yeah, in a practical sense, but she's still running to be Prime Minister.
Neither does fucking Corbyn. No point was Labour going to get a stonking majority, was it? Nobody was being nasty about that. Why did people have to be nasty to our Joe?
To be fair, people are quite rude about Corbyn, but...
Yeah, that's fair. Nobody said that he's not going to be Prime Minister.
A lot of people did,
actually fair. But I think that her losing her seat and not continuing to be leader of the Lib Dems actually gives them us... I'm still a Lib Dem, and I will be voting in the... in the leadership election that comes up, the ability to properly draw a line under the Brexit thing and start afresh. Albeit with, at the moment, the two front runners are Leila Moran, who is the only person I've ever voted for who has taken office, apart from, like, in the Westminster elections.
Was she deputy leader?
No, Ed Davies, deputy leader.
In what capacity did you vote for her then?
As my MP when I was in Oxford.
Oh, she's Oxford, okay. Mm.
Yeah, so I voted for her in 2017, and she was my rep. Yeah, she was my representative.
So it's Leila Moran and, did you say, Ed Davies?
And Ed Davey are the two most likely people to be running on the ballot.
There's 13, 14?
11.
11.
Makes it easy, yeah, to whittle that down.
I also, you know, it... Obviously, in terms of the number of seats, it was not a good election for the Lib Dems, but they raised the percentage of their vote more than any other party. Mm-hmm. They're now at, like, what, 7.4?
Our voting system, Jimmy.
It's bad. And actually, you know, obviously, it's still not good in the sense that you want to be earning seats rather than earning percentage votes, but that still suggests to me that they didn't necessarily have a terrible election. I know that sounds counterintuitive, but...
I don't know. I feel like the decapitation of your party is a pretty terrible thing to happen. It was humiliating.
Yeah,
really.
But you can say it's a failure, and, you know,
And to be back to, they're not even going to have the rights to the to multiple questions in PMQs. Like,
they haven't had those for a while, 5 years.
No, yeah. No, but they have at least, like, it's relatively recent memory of them being in government or being the third party. They're not even the third party. They're barely the fourth.
And I think they obviously just suffered the thing that Lib Dems often suffer, which is that when people get close to a general election, they're like, well, the only real candidates mm-hmm. are the Tories and Labour.
Mm-hmm.
And you saw that with, like, you know, when before the general election campaign started, the Lib Dems were polling pretty well for a very long time. They were actually up at, what, 22%. They were near to Labour in mm-hmm. terms of... There was one poll, I seem to recall, that had Labour, the Lib Dems, the Brexit Party and the Tories all
within, like, 2 points of each
20%,
other.
20%, yeah. 20-25%.
That was before the European elections, though, I believe.
Yes, I think that was. Mm. Or it was even just after as well. But, it's really hard to assess how bad the campaign went for Jo Swinson, which sounds weird because she obviously lost her seat and the Lib Dems didn't gain any MPs, but they gained vote share.
They did gain MPs, but they also lost MPs.
Right, yeah.
So they've gained new MPs.
In Richmond, they knocked Zach Goldsmith.
They knocked Zach Goldsmith out again. Sarah Olney is back there. Mm. They've got Edinburgh West.
Yeah, that sounds right. One of the Edinburghs.
A couple in the south east, but it's a weird 11 seats. Mm. Like, it's really difficult to kind of be able to find the string that links all of them together. And it's going to be really curious what a kind of, like, post-Brexit Lib Dems is going to look like. I know this is the Lib Dem podcast, but... what do you think is the... who do you think would be the best person? Who do you think would be the most likely person to bring you back?
It's not really a person for me, personally. It's simply a question of whether they will move on from Brexit or whether they will become the party of rejoin.
Because mm-hmm.
if they become just a rejoiners party, I can't really participate or vote for them.
Why not? That feels like it doesn't... counter your what you've said about the problem with a second referendum, because Brexit would have happened by
that is true, yeah. So I don't have a I don't think it's anti-democratic to do that, but I also I'm not entirely sure whether there would be a compelling case for it, like once we've left and, you know, maybe some years pass and the Eurozone in particular integrates further. You know, is there a compelling case for the UK to rejoin the EU? I'm not... obviously, somebody somewhere will try and put it, but...
As with everything, and wonderfully, our political system makes it quite difficult for us to be able to make these arguments, but it depends.
It does depend.
It depends how you rejoin, how much time has happened.
I suppose I don't mind if there's, like, a vague commitment to investigating that at some stage, but... I was worried that the Lib Dems might become a bit monomaniacal about mm-hmm. the whole thing.
It'll definitely be an interesting leadership context between at least Leila Moran and Ed Davey.
Yeah. I mean, I think it would be better for the Lib Dems to accept that argument has been lost for the time being.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe 20 years hence, we will rejoin the EU.
Give it 10.
Give it 10.
Go on.
We'll barely have left by that stage.
We'll still be in trade negotiations.
Yeah, we still will. At least, you know, at least see how it goes, I mm-hmm. think. And then if you're like, this is actually, as we predicted, was shitter than actually just being a member, then yeah, you can campaign to rejoin. With some smugness on your face, although not too much, because that will annoy people. But yeah, I think that's an interesting question for the Lib Dems, is what they do about the whole EU issue. But
I think they just stop talking about it.
I think it would probably be better for them if they did. I think it would be better
but
for
then,
everyone if,
but
if
then
they did.
What is your mantle? It's been interesting listening to the likes of the Romaniacs podcast.
What was their reaction to the general election?
Oh, they were very sad.
Yeah. did they realise that the kind of Europhile radical Remainer movement that they represent has failed? Has
yes,
lost?
Yeah, broadly, yeah. Yes. There is Alex Andreou, who even I find insufferable. He's like, no, we need to fight them on their beaches, or whatever. But I think that they, like, they're in a similar position to me. It's like, oh, well, we now need to, and Ian Dunn, especially from politics.co.uk, was quite articulate about expressing the need to somehow keep this political unity that has taken people on marches, that has made people donate to campaigns and to causes and all of these political, non-governmental political institutions. How we turn that into something that doesn't just dissipate, and how you turn kind of like this, what disparagers would call a metropolitan liberal elite, how you turn those feelings into kind of like an effective political bloc going forward.
I think that's very difficult, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because actually, in some way, the reason that the People's Vote campaign was so successful, and it was very successful, I think, in that it definitely put the second referendum onto the table, and that was in genuine contention. I mean, obviously, Labour ran with that as their policy. And had they won even a minority government with Lib Dems supporting them, that we would be on course to having a second referendum right now.
Why are you dangling this in front of me?
That was what was at stake in this election, although not significantly, not enough at stake that I voted for the Tories and actually, pursued it in that sense. But I don't see how you actually remold that into any sort of political movement going forward. Because although you have some vague values around internationalism and progressivism and whatever, it's pretty mushy unless you have a concrete goal. Which the second referendum was a concrete goal, and now that is off the table. What exactly does Remainiac stand for?
Anti-Johnson, I think that's what it ends up standing for.
But the weird thing...
And anti-Americanization, anti-Putinization of his international image as well. Intellectualism, stats, economy, economics... Which sounds like I'm being like a blowhard and being like a bit wanky and being like, economic. But I feel like that's a genuine stance to have, like evidence-based policy.
I mean, everyone pursues evidence-based policy, but they argue about the evidence and what it means. Anyone who's like, I'm in favour of evidence-based policy just doesn't accept that other people come at it from different premises.
Lies, damn lies and statistics.
Well, yeah, I just... most people really are in favour of policy-based evidence. Fundamentally, that's really what people are about when it comes to researching arguments and all the rest of it.
That's everybody who has a pivot table in an Excel spreadsheet. Labour obviously did very badly. The exit poll was 197. What was their final seat share?
203 or 204.
Yeah,
I think.
The worst they've done in our lifetime.
Oh, it's almost the worst they've done in my nan's lifetime, notwithstanding my nan's dead.
Mm-hmm.
But, but she was north of 80 when she passed into the next world. So, it was 1935 that was the... And they were on the up, I think, in 1935.
Yeah,
so the context for that is quite different. So some people are now in the process of actually going through all the polling and all the rest of it and trying to figure out why Labour did so bad. Corbyn was obviously a factor. But what is weird to me is that Corbyn ran in 2017 and got 40% of the votes.
Yeah.
So what changed in two and a half years? I'm not 100% sure.
Brexit, the second referendum. And where did they lose? And where was it significant that they lost? North. The North, who voted to leave, and who were able to kind of get by with the ambiguity of Labour's Brexit stance in 2017, but who, as soon as they pivoted to, we are going to do a second referendum, we're going to drag this out even longer because you've had so much fun up until this point, that's what made them lose so terribly.
Do you think so?
They've lost places that have never voted for anyone other than the Labour Party.
I wonder. I mean, I'm sure Brexit is a factor in all of this, but their stance was... I mean, they did promise to implement the referendum before it was held and after it was it came out with the result it came out with. But I don't know. I have looked into this a bit, but I'm not 100% sure why it was that it turned. And I think even though Brexit is one of the moving parts in this, I don't know. I think it might just be because... Boris Johnson is actually just a much more, you know...
He's very canny, isn't he?
I see why people respond to him in a way they didn't respond to Theresa May.
Because mm-hmm. He's not a woman.
I think that's part,
that's part
of it.
That's part of it.
Yeah. I think also he's somebody that even when he gets caught out, still looks somewhat convincing. I can see why people find him convincing. I don't personally find him convincing. But do you remember that?
Thank you for clarifying.
That Andrew Neil interview where he... He's been questioned about some clauses, and he's like, I would go with clause 2.3, and Andrew Neil's like,
what about 2.4?
Yeah,
which negates what Boris Johnson was saying about 2.3.
But it makes it very obvious that Johnson is talking out his ass. But he's more plausible. Like there is something plausible about him, I think. Do you know what I mean? Like when you're watching somebody like who professes to be a leader, I think Theresa May, probably in objective terms, is much better. Like he's
administratively, she was seen as somebody who was over the details.
Yeah, over
she
the had details.
A very
yeah.
centralized cabinet office, all of that kind of stuff.
Johnson is very laissez-faire and is quite famously, whenever he get like, is bad at taking orders. But when he's in a position of power and he's got the option to delegate, he will delegate and he'll let people have free rein because
he doesn't
care about the details. So, you know, what is... He might still end up as quite a competent Prime Minister for that reason, I think.
I think he's
I think he
has the potential to be in power until the 2030s.
I find it very hard to believe that Labour will get more seats than the Tories in the 2024 election that we're assuming is going to take place.
But it wouldn't happen in 2024. We would assume, right? Well, at least not up until the winter deadline that we now have for elections.
So the Fixed Term Parliaments Act, which they're going to repeal, actually stipulates that even if you hold an election in, say, December, the next election will still be in May.
Oh, does it reset?
Yeah.
Oh, so that's quite nice, actually.
So officially, if he kept the Fixed Term Parliaments Act, which they won't, it would still be like May 2024, I think. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But that would still be the term limit is 2024.
Well, they'll repeal it.
They have to have an election by the end of 2024 anyway.
I think so, yeah.
Have to because Parliament limits are 5 years.
5 years, yeah. So,
with or without the fixed term.
But he'll obviously decide when he wants to call it. I think...
How exciting.
It'll be sometime in 2024, I think. Mm-hmm. I don't think he'll call it in any earlier than that.
But... something crazy happening, which obviously wouldn't happen in British politics.
No. I think Labour are going to be out of power for a generation now, you know.
But well, it's already been 10
years. It's been half a generation, I think.
Yeah.
So.
What do you put their collapse down to? Because I think you say something quite interesting about the fact that Corbyn was a constant from 2017 to now.
Well, this is what's weird to me is that if you listen to like the feedback from a lot of people who canvassed, they say Corbyn kept coming up on the doorstep. People didn't like him. They didn't trust him over security was a major thing.
I find that so interesting because I can't believe that people care about security enough.
I don't. Well, all of the problems with Corbyn were evident before 2017. So I don't see why anyone has changed their opinion about Corbyn since then. But clearly, I think people probably have.
Because there was a certain amount of new novelty to Corbyn in 2017, don't you think? It was his first... He'd only been leader, like...
So he was elected in 2015.
A couple of years, yeah?
Yeah,
2015. And so there was still kind of like a novelty to... nationalisation, hello! Whereas, got old hat. There was something novel about somebody who was being chanted about at Glastonbury and who was this scruffy old man, and none of that novelty had worn off by the time we'd gotten to 2017. Perhaps, do you think?
It just baffles me, like the election, like even though when we were last here, I looked at the polls and said the most likely result is clearly a Tory majority of some sort. You know, there's outside chances it could be a hung parliament or a large Tory majority, which is what we ended up with. But actually, when you look at all the fundamentals, like the Tories have been in power for 10 years now. They should be losing seats. They shouldn't be gaining them.
It's kind of like all of the things, that, all of the factors that fed into Trump's victory was after 2 years of the Democrats. It was a new candidate against somebody who was linked with the old regime. Like, in a lot of ways, it should have been Trump who won. Mm. Like, he ended up being president. Whereas it was kind of like the reverse. And by hanging stuff on Brexit and having Corbyn as a foil that they could use, they were able to kind of like game the system.
Well, I mean, you can only campaign in the circumstances which are presented to you.
So apparently the reason that they were so keen to go for a December election was because apparently Labour were going to get rid of... There were talks of trying to get rid of Corbyn in the new year, or Corbyn would have stepped down in the new year.
Interesting. Who did you hear that from?
Koonsberg.
Oh, really?
I mentioned it on the last Brexit cast, yeah.
That's interesting.
But there's all of this internal, behind-the-scenes manoeuvring, and especially the manoeuvring around the whether or not people were going to go for a second referendum off the bat with this Boris Johnson Brexit deal, or whether or not they were going to go for a general election. They made the call to go for an election. The Lib Dems and Labour.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you heard the Talking Politics sort of post-election analysis.
Yes.
Yeah.
Aren't they clever?
They are very clever. He also did, David Runciman does have a great voice. It's
fantastic.
Very satisfying to listen to. They really highlighted Jo Swinson's role in the whole thing of actually enabling the general election to take place, which I thought was quite interesting in its own way.
Interesting and stupid.
You think?
So, hearing the Romaniacs post-election broadcast, Naomi, can't remember her name, Pimlicat on Twitter, who is either the head of or she's hugely involved in Best for Britain, had a load... They'd invested an awful lot of their funding in polling around the results of, if it goes to a general election, this is what's going to happen. And they were taking all of this information to of a Conservative majority if it went to a general election around, and it got ignored. And they were like, you need to go for the second referendum option. If this is your goal, you need to go for the second referendum. And it was ignored.
Well, one of the things that David Runciman and co kind of bring up is that actually there was no compelling reason for the kind of Remain forces in Parliament to offer Johnson an election. They could have kept the situation just going kind of in perpetuity, really. And we weren't due...
It could have gone until 2022.
Exactly, yeah, under the Fixed Term Parliaments Act. Which obviously, in governance terms, is a bit of a disaster, but in terms of if you want to remain in the EU...
Stormont's worse. Regardless, yeah, Northern Ireland's legislature is going to be worse than Westminster.
So, in some ways, the decision to actually approve Johnson's general election in the end, because they blocked it...
Yeah, that was, that's what... That lost it.
Yeah. But, I mean, coming back to why Labour did so badly, I guess... A lot of it must come down to Johnson versus Corbyn compared to May versus Corbyn, I think.
Yeah.
But actually, when you... This is the other... This is first past the post again, but Johnson and May did not win... If you look at percentage terms, did not win very different, numbers of votes. Mm-hmm. It just translated into very different numbers of seats.
Mm-hmm. Because he was able to take a lot of the... It was the industrial north. You can now walk across the north of England via Conservative constituencies, and I love that visual. You haven't been able to do that since before World War II,
I don't think.
Okay. Yeah.
So what do you think are the prospects for Labour now?
Obviously, it depends who the next leader is going to be.
So Jeremy Corbyn's resigned, the leadership election's going to happen in March.
We have a few announcements. So Keir Starmer is running, yeah. Emily Thornberry.
Yes.
Is running.
Lisa Nandy,
I don't think, is officially announced.
But it's sort of assumed she'll run.
Yes. Jess Phillips, it's assumed that she would run.
Rebecca Long Bailey,
and Angela Rayner.
Yes.
So I've heard that Angela Rayner...
Clive Lewis as well has also announced.
Who?
You don't know who Clive Lewis is? Okay,
no.
Never mind.
He'll do really well. But what's interesting is the barrier to entry to actually being on the ballot that goes to... that ends up going to the membership. It's really fucking convoluted now.
Is it?
You now have to have the backing of 5% of the Parliamentary Labour Party. So that is about 10
MPs.
MPs, I believe. Is it 5 or 10%?
Yeah, well, 20 MPs would be 10%. So yeah,
I believe maybe it's 10%. Okay. It used to be 15.
Because 35 MPs nominated Corbyn back in the day.
Yes.
Yeah.
But now you also need to have a certain amount of support from local Labour constituency parties and or a certain number of trade unions who are part of the Labour movement backing you. I have no idea how the fuck that pie is going to get carved up or whether it's multiple pies. Is it one pie? What the... How the hell is that... Like, it's just been made deliberately more difficult.
I had no idea it involved this level of complexity.
Such an unnecessary amount of complexity. So a couple of people that are definitely going to be on the ballot. Rebecca Lombardi is basically the Corbynite...
Continuity candidate
who is backed by court. Won't officially be backed by Corbyn, but is backed by McDonnell.
Right.
Then you have someone like Jess Phillips, who is basically the I am not Corbyn and I never have been Corbyn, and my corner of Metropolitan Liberal Elite Twitter are very excited about joining the Labour Party to vote for Jess Phillips. I don't think she'd do a very good job at that, but I like her as an individual, so good for her.
Interesting.
Then you have Keir Starmer. The man.
Something that is quite interesting about him is that I always assumed that he was quite posh, but he apparently is from quite humble beginnings.
I don't think it's possible anymore to become a Labour candidate if
you're black.
You're posh.
If you're black.
Not if you're black. No men. No men in the Labour
Party.
There has
been an assumption that they will end up choosing a female leader.
But Keir Starmer is still the favourite.
Is he the favourite?
Still the favourite.
Quantum.
The bookies.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Well, at least he was a couple of days ago when I last checked. Yeah. But there was originally talk of Labour having a all-women shortlist for leaders. Because they are the only party in the UK who haven't had a female leader.
Well, the only major party.
Oh, Brexit have only had one leader.
Yeah, yeah. There must be loads of tiny parties that have never had a female leader.
I think Lord Buckethead is without gender, so...
Okay. Well, they've still never had a female leader.
Yeah, yeah.
that's the case. But beyond the...
But it's Labour being able to bounce back in any way, shape or form, it's going to completely be contingent on who leads that party.
I think that's true. There's a question...
And who can take it to Johnson? Unfortunately, they're going to be defined by Johnson as a PM.
Well, that's always the case, that if you're in opposition, you're defined by who you're battling against. But do you think it's... I suppose this is a counterfactual, but if in 2018 they'd replaced Corbyn with somebody else, let's say Rebecca Long-Bailey or maybe Lisa Nandy or someone like that, and they'd ended up fighting Johnson in a similar election to the one we just had, do you think Labour would have done better?
Depends who that was, I think.
But a lot of the problem with Corbyn...
I think it's really difficult to battle Johnson's charisma.
Yeah?
Yeah. Can you imagine Rebecca Long-Bailey going up against Boris Johnson? I can imagine somebody like Emily Thornberry going up against Boris Johnson.
I do know what you mean by that, yeah.
Which is why I ain't going to join the Labour Party to be able to... I'm not going to pull a Tory... Like when I joined, for listeners who may have forgotten, I joined the Conservative Party to basically troll it and vote for the next leader, and I chickened out and didn't in the end.
You actually didn't vote in the end?
No, I sport my ballot.
Ah, I do remember that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But you
I'm
do,
not going to do that.
You
I'm not
going
to do the same for the Labour Party.
Why not,
no.
though?
That's a fair question. and I don't want to. And that's my answer. I don't know. I feel like I'm too close to the person. I felt like at the time Johnson as leader was an inevitability, and I was just there so I could make some content. I'll be real. Whereas I think that this is going to be a much tighter race for the Labour leadership, and so I don't want to. I don't know. I feel like it's a responsibility.
See, I think anyone who's listening to this, who, I guess if you're on the right, then this probably doesn't apply to you. But if you're on the left in general, whether or not you identify as Labour, I think it's a totally legitimate thing to join the Labour Party purely to vote for
100%
the candidate, because
it's kind of what happened with Corbyn in 2015.
Labour and the Tories dominate politics. I mean, even Labour in its current state, current weakened state, dominate politics to such a degree. And where Labour decide to go does affect what policies you're going to be able to vote for in the next general election.
100%.
So, you know,
it was part of my three-step plan.
Yeah?
Do you remember that?
No.
You didn't pay attention to any of my live stream, did you?
I was watching a lot of BBC and a bit of ITV and a bit of Sky, which apparently no one watched. I watched bits of it.
My three-point plan is... Thank you for asking, Jimmy.
Jazza, what is your three-point plan?
Oh my God, I'm so glad you asked. It's, amongst other... It was take a break, volunteer,
have a Kit Kat.
Actually, it's a four-point plan. No, it was take a break and look after yourself. Volunteer at an organisation whose cause you believe in. And the third one was join a political party so you can shape who you vote for in the next election. And it'd be that Labour or the Lib Dems or the Greens or the soon-to-be Reform Party. Who knows?
I, to be honest, I don't think the Reform Party is going to have serious legs. I don't sense that Farage's heart is in it. So this is Nigel Farage. I can't remember when he announced this, but he said the Brexit Party's work is kind of done here, so he's going to create the Reform Party, which will push for constitutional reform, such as the changing the House of Lords so it's electable now rather than just appointed.
I like that.
I like that. I just don't think he cares.
No.
I don't think he gives a shit.
No, I don't think he cares either.
So
it's fun for him.
I would be well up for having a proper constitutional reform movement that, you know, replace first past the post with something else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, change the House of Lords so it is probably that it's a Parliament of the Regions or something like that.
Well, have you seen this is potentially what Johnson is going to do to the House of Lords?
Well, he's got this commission he's going to set up.
What is it? Is there something?
It's got a long ass title.
Yeah,
but it's about.
It's meant to be deliberately difficult to remember.
I've got to be honest. If you're setting up a commission for something, it doesn't suggest it's high up your priority list.
No, sure.
So I think that will be a talking shop that will report back to Johnson. At this point, it will be towards the end of his, you know, his 5 years.
It is interesting though, because the Conservatives are still lacking a majority in the House of Lords. And so it may be legislation may be frustrated. It's unlikely because the convention there doesn't really stand.
So the Salisbury Convention is that if something is in a manifesto and then that party wins the general election, the Lords don't block it. And they tend not to block finance bills as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, notwithstanding that they, you know, they don't have a majority in the House of Lords, I don't think it's going to be a problem for them.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they're going to be so caught up in dealing with Brexit and the ramifications for it, I don't think they're ever going to get around to constitutional reform in any serious way. They'll probably introduce voter ID, which they've already promised to do.
Oh, God, I forgot about that.
There's various other things.
That's really, really bad. People are just not... People, the only thing that that's going to do is stop people from being able to vote.
They did say, when it was originally floated, that they would also give out free ID cards. So you wouldn't actually have to pay for a passport or driving license.
So we're going to get national ID cards 15 years later through the back door after the Conservative Party blocks them. I hate all of this.
So you're going to vote... Sorry, you're going to... You're still part of the Lib Dems.
I am.
Still a member of the Lib Dems.
Yeah.
And what are your hopes for the Lib Dems then? Bearing in mind you're not participating in the Labour election.
I would really like for them to... So, in terms of the Labour election, even though I'm not participating in it, I think the best person for the job of the potential candidates is probably Emily Thornberry. Because even though she grew up with her parents' divorce and she lived in a council flat, she's really fucking posh, and is married to like a lord or something. And I'm sorry, but when somebody like Boris Johnson tries to make her look posh, it's just not going to work. It's not going to stick. Mm. Also, she just has a matronly, headmistressy vibe to her that I don't think the posh boys of Eton are going to be able to handle.
I see what you mean. I think
that's... I think she's the best person to counter Boris Johnson.
See, I just don't, purely on like a rhetorical, you know, debating level, I just don't really see Rebecca Long Bailey being able to deal with Boris Johnson at the dispatch box. If we're purely talking about that.
But she will probably win it.
She definitely seems to be one of the favourites.
Apparently, so. Angela Rayner, they live together in London. They're flatmates in London, Rebecca Long Bailey and Angela Rayner.
What, currently?
I think so, yeah.
I've got to be like Angela Rayner, who I've actually seen speak live, is much more impressive as a speaker.
100%. Apparently, Angela Rayner is not going to stand so that Rebecca Long Bailey can get the leadership.
I have heard that. Yeah, I'm not sure about that.
That's a bad idea. Rebecca Long Bailey. Rebecca Long Bailey is a bad communicator.
There's something a bit unpersuasive about her.
Mm-hmm.
At the risk of being accused of being a sexist, but yeah.
I just said that Angela Rayner was very good.
That doesn't defend you, man. I've been in these scenarios before.
Rebecca Long Bailey would be a bad leader. But I think that especially if Angela Rayner doesn't run, I think she would win.
So are we assuming that it's going to be kind of continuity Corbyn as far as the policy agenda goes?
Well, I don't know. We don't know enough about what the membership looks like or is going to look like in the next couple of months.
I find it hard to believe it's going to leer back to the centre.
I don't think any of those candidates are really centre candidates. Unless Yvette Cooper were to run, and that's unlikely.
There were talks that she was going to run.
I think people just want her to run. I don't think she's actually going to run. There's no chance of her winning. There's no chance of her winning.
But if you assume Labour's going to stay leftish, it's not going to go back to the centre in like a Blairite fashion, where does that leave the Lib Dems, as far as you're concerned?
Fighting for the centre ground and fighting for the creation of that movement that Ian Dunn talked about.
Right.
Of how do you coalesce? There are these values that kind of beyond the desire to stay in the European Union that did unite all of these kind of like Remainer voters. And
yes.
Activating that base, I think, would be the most important and the major part of what the Lib Dems would have to do in the next 5 years.
I see what you're saying, but they're still going to suffer that, you know, third party squeeze.
100%. But then you also need to go back to the Lib Dems under Kennedy. Who Kennedy? What was his name?
Charles Kennedy.
Charles Kennedy.
Yeah.
Who was basically decentralised the Lib Dems in the noughties. And made it so that it was viable, well, like it was a constituency by constituency basis. And
yeah.
That's increasingly hard for our national politics because of the way that we approach general elections nowadays. But I think you need to have a certain amount of returning to that.
Well, he's credited with building up the Lib Dems, so they were a 60-seat party. Yes. Mm. I think that is the route for the Lib Dems. I think they have to go back and start thinking about politics in that way,
mm-hmm.
if they've not done so already. But,
cool.
Yeah,
We've been talking for 50 minutes.
I see.
Shall we wrap up?
We probably should.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, very briefly, aside from Brexit, what do you think about the Boris Johnson premiership? Does that fill you with joy or dread?
Oh, what do you fucking think?
probably more of the latter, but you know.
But you want me to ruminate on that a little bit? Okay.
A little bit, yeah.
What I think is really interesting, and what I think is going to change, and what is going to be the most defining part of the next decade, is the not Trumpian nature of Boris Johnson's presentation, but the Putin-esque presentation of Boris Johnson.
What do you mean by that?
The way that his election campaign was textbook, go to a factory, drive a digger, go hold some babies, kiss them. Just yesterday, he was pictured serving Christmas dinner to troops in Tallinn in Estonia.
Yeah.
All of these are kind of like the photo ops that define, and that imagery that defines somebody like Putin.
It's fairly textbook politician imagery.
It is, but I don't think we've really had that since maybe Cameron in opposition.
I mean, George Osborne loved the whole hard hat, let's go see a factory thing.
That's fair. But I think also this, it is gonna, it's an interesting new type of politics for the United Kingdom, and I don't think that we're ready for it, because it's going to be very Putin-y or Putin-y.
I think that's maybe a bit harsh, but we'll see.
I'm not saying that he's going to start locking up and killing gay people. Like he's pretty liberal on that kind of a front, but. His ability to, through his charisma and through his personality cult, and it is a personality cult, how he's going to be communicating over the next potentially 5 years.
He definitely does have that style of communication, so I agree with you on that point. And I think it's just on some level, we're not used on the right dishonourable to having a House of Commons that has a large majority.
I mean, we've never.
For any particular party. And
we have never.
I prefer it that way, actually. I think there is something a bit worrying about just letting a party loose for 5 years to do what it wants.
It's almost like proportionate representation and coalition government is our preferred form of...
This is less the Lib Dem podcast and more the PR podcast.
It is now, isn't it, really? Fantastic. Thank you for listening. You can find the podcast at Right Dishonour on Twitter.
Yes.
You can find Jimmy at JD Nichols. Fine, I'll do the whole thing. Or me at Jazza John.
On all social media platforms.
On all social media platforms, because I'm a good internet boy. Thank you very much for listening. Go check out my video that I made about the pep talk post-election. You'll like that. It'll be useful for you.
Yeah.
Shall we?
Yes.
Okay, bye.